I'm talking about Motown Maurice right down here in the state of Florida.
And we've got Motown Maurice of the Motown Maurice Show.
I want to introduce you to Motown Maurice.
We have special, special, special guest, Motown Maurice.
Motown Maurice.
Speaking of crazy, we have Motown Maurice,
a man who is trying to put Tampa on the map for late night television.
He is not the next Arsenio Hall. He is the first Motown Maurice.
For those of you who haven't had a chance to experience Motown Maurice,
you have to understand he is very persistent.
And now he has transitioned
from Tampa to Los Angeles, California.
He's now in Los Angeles.
Continuing his pursuit of the quest of a late night talk show host.
Keep an eye on Motown.
Absolutely.
Keep an eye on that gentleman. One day this man is going to be the new face of late night.
Motown, we love you.
Motown Maurice, are you on the line?
And now, your host, Motown Maurice.
Hey, 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 ladies and gentlemen, it is the day after Christmas, and this is the show that keeps on giving. What's up, everybody? This is Motown Maurice. You're listening to Motown Maurice's Hustle and Shuffle, and I am pleased to tell you that today's show is going to be a fantastic show because I have a very fantastic guest that is well, diverse, and dynamic in so many ways. But I must admit that I feel a little bit under pressure about today's guest. Yes, I'm feeling under pressure, not because my guest today is an award-winning poet, nor because she has her own television show and because she's a television producer. No, none of that is the reason I'm feeling under pressure. I'm feeling under pressure because my guest is an English expert and a college educator. So I have to be careful about my pronunciations. I can't use no Ebonics, no street slang, no hip-hop jargon, none of that on today's show because I might be judged, and if I'm judged, I might fail this interview, and I can't do that. So you feel the pressure that I'm going through. I'm another host, and I got to speak right. So bear with me. And callers, if you're calling in, do know that you're under this microscope too. You can't just say anything, any and anything under an English educator. But with all that being said, I must also mention that my guest is a seminar director. She is a wonderful singer. She has several books available on Amazon.com, and her humanitarian work goes far back as over 20 years. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together, get your pronunciations right, and make some noise for Marcielle Brandler. Wrong tune. There you go. There we go. Marcielle, how are you doing?
Hi. Feel free to speak any way you want to speak.
Are you sure? I'm like, oh, man.
I am absolutely sure.
When I found out you were an English educator, oh, man, I felt really under pressure. I'm like, okay, I got to get things right. I pulled out a couple dictionaries, started to make sure that I get things right. Oh, my goodness.
No. I tell my students when we're with our friends, we speak in whatever way we speak, because that's part of bonding. It's all communication, and if it makes you feel comfortable and good, that's the most important thing, especially in personal relationships.
Well, I'm glad you shared that with me.
Absolutely.
I even tried to work on an English accent that I had no business
trying.
But you mentioned your students, and based off of what I've read and what I've seen online, it seems like you have a strong connection with your students. They love you, and they appreciate what you do for them.
Yeah, they really do, and you know, they really get it, and it's so wonderful to be able to teach college, because you just walk in, you teach, and, you know, they either get it or they don't. Where teaching high school and junior high, which I've also done, you know, it's really too much pressure. It's just too hard. But, yeah, the students are really, you know, when you get motivated students, then it really feels right, you know. It's the problem is when students are just, you know, they just want everything handed to them, and then that's when the problems come. But, you know, that's how teaching is. It's just part of the job, you know.
Wow, and that must be really fulfilling for you. It keeps you motivated to know
it
that
really
your students
does,
really
and it
appreciate
keeps
you.
It does, and it keeps you young, it really, you know, because you're around all these young people, and so, you know, you dress younger and you feel younger, and it's really a powerful influence that they have on us too.
Yes, 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 fantastic. So that's the that keeps your spirit young, and in which is why you create such wonderful material through poetry and singing and all that. It all comes around full circle.
It really does. So true.
Nice, nice. So let's talk about some of your poetry. I'm a poet myself. Well, my roots of creativity are in poetry. I did a lot of poetry in college, but I don't have any of it published like you do. So I'm really interested in knowing on how everything started to evolve with you and with your poetry experience.
Well, I started out as a singer-songwriter, and then poetry just happened, and it started getting published in a lot of journals, and that was really encouraging. And it just sort of evolved. And poetry leaves you more free to, you know, when you have a song and a tune, you're kind of boxed in by the tune. But if you just have the words themselves, then you're free to kind of go anywhere you want to. So that's partly why I also wrote poetry and have done for, well, most of my life, my whole life, since I could, you know, put pen to paper.
Fantastic. So when did you win this award, and which poem was it?
Oh, that was my poem Eden, which is about my mother. And it's a very, what I call a very poemy poem. And that was, I think, 1996, mm-hmm. something like that, over at Mount San Antonio College. And out of the professors that entered their poems, mine won first prize. And that was a real honor. Yeah, and my poems have been published into Czech and French and Spanish and Arabic and published around the world. So it's been a very interesting journey.
Wow, you know you've made it when your work starts getting translated. You
yeah.
know you made it. That's something wild. That's something big. I love that. I love that. I want you to take a time out and share one of your poems with us. You have the poem, What the Ugly Girl and the Pretty Boy Have in Common. Can you tell us a little bit about it before you actually recite it?
Yeah. This was about in the 80s, and I was sitting in a Denny's having my lunch, looking over at a young guy and girl, and they were really into talking to each other. And she was quite a pretty girl, and he was pretty darn ugly. And I just immediately wrote this poem and didn't even have to rewrite it. And it basically speaks to, that in a way, being beautiful and being ugly, you're both being treated, the results are the same. So, and the poem kind of speaks for itself. It's what I call one of my audience pleasers, because it's very simple, it's very easy to understand, and everybody gets it. It's not like super, super deep or anything. So here it is, What the Ugly Boy and the Pretty Girl Have in Common. She is stared at. His face is passed over. Neither of them are seen. She's so cute, it's assumed she's spoiled. He's so ugly, he's cute. He can't believe she likes him. She's afraid he'll find something he doesn't like. They marry. Over the years, his face acquires dignity, and her face gains character. Now, people say how alike they look.
Fantastic, fantastic. I love that. I love that one. That was very nice. And I love how you're able to pull inspiration off of real life. And you do that often in all of your work, I assume?
I do a lot, yeah. A lot of things that either I've observed or... And I love political poems. I write a lot of political poems. One of my I have a 9/11 poem that I love that I wrote, and... My students, they do essays on my book of poems, and several times students have come to me and said, wow, your poem, your 9/11 poem, which is called The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is in my book, they'll say, hey, Marcielle or Professor Brandler, that poem, this one girl said, your poem made me cry, and last night I was just like cried. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And she said, no. She said, I wasn't able to cry. This friend of hers died in one of the towers, and she said, I wasn't able to cry all these years, and it was so cathartic to allow it to come out. And she wrote her essay on that poem. So wow. A lot of times poetry saves lives. During 9/11, people were not able to find any comfort, and movies didn't do it, books and novels didn't do it. People started dusting off their old poetry books, taking them out of the shelves and reading poetry, because that was the only thing that could comfort them and that had deep enough meaning for them.
Wow.
So I find that to be interesting.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's like, and, you know, as a poet myself and performing a lot in the past, and I'm thinking, everything you're saying is flashing back, and I'm remembering a lot of the poems that people used to do, whether it be the consistent performers or just open mic participants. But all of their poems, or at least a handful of poems, had something that provided closure in their life, whether it be
yeah.
a relationship or a job that they got sick of, you know, closure. And poetry, they go hand in hand. So that is amazing what your poem was able to do, because that's basically what it did for that lady, right?
Yeah, and that's a really good point that you bring up, that a lot of times people find closure with poetry. It's so powerful. And I think song, you know,
mm-hmm.
anything, any of the arts,
mm-hmm.
sometimes a movie, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely.
And not to veer too much off topic, but one thing that provides closure for me on my quest is my blog. When I blog, that's like closure,
because
I can put
yeah.
it so much behind me. And in many ways, it's poetry, because I'm writing. So writing, poetry, blogs,
yeah.
they're all in the family. They are all in the family. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Motown Maurice. You're listening to Motown Maurice's Hustle and Shuffle. I have the talented and wonderful Marcielle Brandler on the line. We're going to keep this conversation going. We have another poem called The First One. Please introduce it and tell us about it and recite it.
Well, about 20 years ago, I lived in Burbank, and I saw this gorgeous young man in a turban, and we kind of did a double take on each other. It's like, whoa, who are you? You know, and we started talking, and his father owned the stationery store that I was shopping in, and this is before the internet. And we started talking, and he said, you know, I would like you to be my sexual guru, and because I'm a virgin, and I would love to, you know, make love to you. And I said, well, you know, I don't do those things. I'm not into that. You know, thank you very much. And I went home, and I got really mad, and I was sort of not insulted, but I don't know. It just made me mad. So I wrote this poem. And it's called First One.
First One.
Unravel your turban to let loose your hair to the waist. As yet you're a virgin, a boy who's been lonely and chaste. And now you propose to break open your Pandora's box. It's me that you chose, not considering my need to stop. For I've been a woman past marriage, the bird in the fist, who's juxtaposed real man to the image of the true nihilist. Your sweet exploitation may seem rather flattering to some who call me your guru in sexual matters. My thumb! Though form is not content, I believe that you're aiming to find a new form to express in, which has nothing to do with my mind. Your physic dimensions exist on a whole different plane than my psychic reasons for travels through spiritual rain. If I disappoint you, it's only because you'll not heed my warning reminders that I'll not break down and concede.
Fantastic.
So I'm not giving in, honey. Ain't going for it.
You didn't find that turban wearer and let him listen to that, did you? And recite it for him, did you?
Oh, I never saw him again.
Oh, man. That would have been so cool.
That would have been cool. Who knows? Maybe he'll hear this radio show and...
You know? Wow. Oh, man. So we talked about poetry for a little while, but your accomplishments and your talents go across the board. You're also a singer. I have if anybody who's watching the interview, there's a picture of you with a guitar, and you look like a singer, and you are a singer, and you had a childhood that you wanted to pursue singing. So tell us about that.
Yeah, when I was a little girl, I could have made my parents rich because I had a very strong voice, and it was a high soprano, and it amazed people, you know, because when I speak kind of low, and it amazed people, and all the ways in church, my little churches, they would have me come up and sing a solo, and in high school and junior high, I always sang the solo in the big choir performances for Christmas and the holidays and that kind of thing, and even when I was at university, I sang in the Masterworks Choir, and I could have made my parents rich, but my mother especially was just not supportive. She was very, kept me in the background. I was kind of like her little slave and was not allowed to go outside and play with the other kids my whole life. And it was just really weird. And it was unfortunate because, you know, my parents always struggled. They never really had a secure life, you know, but it's like, well, they chose that, you know, and then I went off to college and started singing in clubs. So it's interesting how, and I didn't really talk about my singing to my family. I didn't talk that I was, you know, working on my BA or my master's or anything. It just happened. And then, you know, after my mother died, I said something to my dad about, well, yeah, when I got my master's degree. And he goes, what? You have a master's degree? And I was like, well, yeah. And he said, I didn't know that. And so then when we'd have a conversation, he'd say, well, you should know that. You have a master's degree. You know, but it was like many years after Mom died. And I mean, I had the master's degree the whole time, you know. But I tell young people, you know, sometimes it's better not to tell people about the projects you're working on because it's like a little delicate thing that you plant. And if you expose it to the ridicule or the fears or bad thoughts of other people, it'll be killed. So sometimes it's better to keep it quiet and just do it until it's too late, it's too big, and nobody can deny that what you're doing, you know? So it's really important that we protect our dreams.
That you have to protect it. Very well said. And I can tell, just based off your childhood experiences and who you are right now, that you've built a lot of resilience and character through all of that. And you're definitely connected. Are you connected to some type of spiritual source of any sort?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in the law of attraction. And I kind of pull from all religions, you know. In fact, I was talking to my dad about that because they're Mormon. And you know, I said, well, yeah, the Buddhists say this, and, you know, in Science of Mind, the Law of Attraction. And he said, wait a minute. He said, so you just choose whatever you want to believe. You pick and choose. I said, well, yeah, you know. And I'm not married to one specific religion. Mm-hmm. I'm always exploring. I was a Unitarian for a while, and now I'm kind of in Science of Mind. Some of the things that are going on in they're calling themselves now the sanctuary for spiritual living. Mm. And some of the things that they've chosen, I kind of don't like, you know.
Yeah.
So I just sort of choose and pick. But I do believe that we need to be ethical, and I know you're into that too, and that we need to focus on our dreams and not allow outside negative forces to influence us, but always try to be honorable and do what we can, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important.
Yes,
because
yes,
it creates.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It creates an energy force around you of beauty and light, and those good people will be drawn to you. But if you're creating negative energy around you, you're going to draw negativity to you.
Exactly, and it just shows that you just have to be positive consistently through it all. Through the frustrations, through the disappointments, you have to always be positive.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and if you allow negativity to pull you down, then more negativity is going to be added onto that. So, you know, even during a frustration or a setback, what looks to us like a setback, trust the universe. Do your work. You can't just kick back and be lazy and not do anything. Do your work, but trust the universe. And
trust.
And that's a challenge.
You know what? That is a big thing. Trust. Is something that people do not attain very easily at all.
No.
If not, never. Trust
yeah.
is tough. It was funny. I was just fussing with my mom about trust, the word trust, just recently. I think last night. But yeah, trust is not easy. But, you know, I can continue on this interview with you and all of your accomplishments make you seem like you're on top of the world, and which you are. You've got a lot of great things going for yourself. But it goes without saying, I know there have been some discouragements and some frustrations on your path. And how do you handle that? And maybe you can mention a few of them.
Yeah, and it's interesting because on my TV show, I talk about that. And a lot of guests want to avoid it. They don't want to talk about, you know, their frustrations. It's almost like I popped out of my mother and everything's been fine ever since. You know, and it's like, that's just not how life is. And
nope.
I always try to get that out of them. For me, you know, it's like discouragement and rejection. That's going to be a part of life. That's just how life is. And rather than focusing on, oh, that person rejected me or I didn't get what I wanted, you're so busy focusing on what you didn't get, what you want. Right behind you, there's a door opening, but you don't see it because you're so busy. And I had to learn that for myself, partly through the law of attraction. That helped me a lot. But I had my publisher, iUniverse, you know, I said, I can't afford to pay you for the book. I'm going to have to make you payments. It's going to take a couple years, you know, $50 payments a month or something. And they said, well, why don't you send out a postcard to everybody you know asking them for a certain amount? So I sent out a postcard asking people for $20. And I said, if you send it by this date, your name will be mentioned in the acknowledgments of the book. And all these people sent me, you know, their little $20, not a lot, but, you know, I made like $100, not a lot of money. But my best girlfriend, we're always saying, honey, I love you and all this. And she's got a lot of money. She's like, she'll spend $100 on a dinner, you know, where I'm spending like $5, you know. And I asked her for the 20, and she said, yes, I got your card. She said, you know, we can't afford it right now. I'll buy your book when it comes out. And I said, well, it's not going to come out if nobody helps me. And so I hung up, and I was all hurt. And but very shortly after that, a young man, who now we're great friends, he sent me $200, and I hardly even knew him.
Wow.
It was like, whoa. You know, so here I'm crying about $20, but shortly after that, what do I get? $200 from somebody. So for me, I've learned that you put your energy out there for what you want, but don't be married to what the source is. You know, don't say, oh, it's got to come from so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
It may not come from that person. It'll come from some other source.
Yes, and that happens so often. It's amazing how often that happens. It's happened to me. You would think the people that you help the most would help you back, but it never happens that way. The people that rarely know you, that barely know you, is the ones that help you. So that's a fantastic example, and I can relate to that in many, many different ways. Now, you talked about your TV show. We don't have much time left on this show here, but I definitely want you to talk about your show. And what is it like? What kind of guests you have on and things like that. Sounds exciting. Marcielle Presents.
Yeah, Marcielle Presents. And I do a few different things. The main thing that I do is interview interesting people who give back to society, people like you. And I definitely want you to be a guest on my show, by the way, Motown.
Thank you.
I think
you
are just such an amazing person.
Thank
so
you.
Will you be on my show?
You know what? Amazing people attract amazing people. Well,
they sure do.
So that's one amazing person to another amazing person. So thank you for the invite. I'll love it. That'll be great.
Yeah, and I interview guests. And usually what I like to do is have like a photograph of the guest when that person was a little kid and talk about what were you like, you know, as a kid. And then we kind of, it's like kind of like, And This Is Your Life. That used to be a TV show on. And so I do that where I'll do, it's like a bio of you and your life. And then we move on up to the present and your current projects. So that's one of my shows. And then I have another episodes where I do episodes on art. And I did one, how art is used by politics throughout the centuries from the beginning of time, even from the cave paintings, because in a way that was social commentary. And so I do that and talk about the arts in general. And I've even found, I found a guy on the internet. We never even met, and I did a show on him. I just asked him for photographs and sending me your comments. And then I just narrated, because he, the guy was amazing. His name is Guido Daniel, and he's out of Milan, Italy, and he does hand paintings, and he's just an amazing guy. So, and he's like now, you know, AT&T and different people have hired him. So there's just so much out there to do a show on. So I'm always, you know, looking for interesting guests and people who are loving and kind, you know. I don't want just anybody on my show.
Fantastic. Yeah. It sounds like you got a really good thing going. I like the This Is Your Life show, you know, just talking about people, you know, help conjure up some of those memories, because sometimes those memories of our childhood, they're just like locked up in a casket. But your show allows us to knock the dust off of it, you know?
I like that. And even on your website, you have a picture of my friend Bruce Thompson. He's a former student of mine. And he was there he is, he's recently on my show, and he did a book about love. And so, he's out there. It's just so wonderful, you know, these different people and guests. The picture that's up right now, that was a picture of an art soiree that I went to and met some people at an organization called AHA, Artists Helping Artists. So, yeah, there's just numerous things going on, and you know, it's wonderful to be a part of it all.
Fantastic.
And Marcielle Presents is my TV show, and my you see on the website there's Marcielle Presents. That's my for my TV show, and then the Web Spawner Connection is my educational website. You can reach me at marcielle@verizon.net, marcielle@verizon.net. So please, people, get in touch with me, and I'd be so happy to work with you. So talk to you later. Bye.
This is Motown Maurice signing out on Motown Maurice's Hustle and Shuffle. Make sure you tune in tomorrow and check out some of the previous episodes. You can also check me out at MotownMaurice.com, the quest of a late night talk show host. Take care. Peace. One love.